AT&T says network upgrades are stalled as Skagway phone service issues continue. And the Haynesboro seeks members for a committee that will recommend changes to borough code. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. Unreliable cell phone service frustrated Skagway residents last summer. Some hope emerged in October when AT&T announced plans to upgrade its network by summer of 2016. But a spokesman says those plans have stalled, and people in Skagway have noticed as they slog through another summer of cell phone problems. Skagway resident Andrew Cremata took to Facebook recently in an effort to hold AT&T accountable for what he saw as lies from the company about upgrading its service for this summer.
It's just so in your face how much they don't care about anyone, but they sure don't mind cashing your check every month.
Cremata says he pays about $150 a month on a shared cell phone plan. But instead of receiving the service he feels like he should get for what he pays,
you can't check your voicemail half the time, some certain texts don't go through, and certain phone calls seem to get dropped a lot more frequently, especially ones that come from out of state.
Cremata's Facebook post garnered more than 70 comments from other fed-up Skagway residents. One said she nearly lost her job because of phone issues. Another said every aspect of her tour business is impacted because of the unreliable service. So what's happened to the upgrades that were supposed to be in place by this summer?
They've just taken longer than we wanted to do.
Chris Brown is AT&T's Director of Network Services in Alaska. There are multiple pieces to the AT&T technology puzzle that connects Skagway customers. One is the microwave radio tower, which used to be the only connection between Skagway and the rest of AT&T's network. But last summer, an especially tall cruise ship blocked the tower's path and cut out service.
And it was at that point we said we need to do something both short-term and long-term. The short-term solution was to procure some fiber capacity so that we could avoid problems for the rest of that summer and until such time as we can raise the tower.
Brown says AT&T turned that tower off and started using a fiber optic connection instead. Now the company is trying to make its tower taller so the microwave radio connection is more reliable. But getting the necessary permits from the Federal Communications Commission and Federal Aviation Administration is taking longer than expected, Brown says.
Most of it has to do with the physical construction of the site and ensuring the FAA that the tower as it was would not violate the rules because of the proximity to the airport.
Once the tower is raised, AT&T plans to turn on a 4G LTE network. The LTE equipment is meant to improve capacity between phones and the cell tower. Then the tower sends the communication back to the rest of the network. Brown says they can't turn on the LTE service until the tower is raised.
We don't want to turn LTE service up until we have good capacity, or it really doesn't provide any advantage.
Will these changes fix the service issues? Skagway residents probably won't find out until next summer. Brown says the improvements should be in place by then. But Skagway is in a unique situation, with demand for service exponentially increasing for about 4 months out of the year during cruise ship season. That presents a challenge for cell phone providers.
We manage carefully that trade-off between the ability to serve the customers during the peak time and the cost of maintaining a network that would be 20 times oversized.
Brown says AT&T typically doesn't design a network to be perfect at the peak load.
The economics of it would not be typically favorable.
Brown says his company's hope is for everyone in Skagway to be an AT&T user, but the recent problems have already lost them at least one customer. Cremata's two-year contract ended recently, and he plans to switch to Verizon or GCI. Although, with the service issues that seem to plague Skagway every summer, he doesn't have high expectations for those providers either. Haynes and Skagway residents interested in running for local government office can put their names in the running next week. The filing period for municipal elections opens Monday, Both Haines and Skagway have 2 borough assembly and 2 school board seats up for grabs this fall. In Haines, voters will choose candidates to fill the seats of current assembly members Diana Lapham and George Campbell. The school board seats of Sarah Swinton and Lisa Schwartz are up for election. All are 3-year positions. In Skagway, residents will vote for assembly seats currently occupied by Tim Cochran and Spencer Morgan. On the school board, seats held by Darren Belisle and Mark Smith open in October. Smith was appointed to the board last year, so the seat he vacates has a 2-year term. The other school board and assembly seats hold 3-year terms. The assembly and school board members whose tenures are up could run for re-election. Skagway's election filing period closes August 15th, and Haines closes August 19th. Municipal elections take place October 4th. Haines borough residents who want to sit on the new Code Review Commission shouldn't expect a short-term project. The commission will meticulously comb through borough code and make recommendations to the assembly for changes or modifications. The goal of the group is to get rid of redundant or defective sections of code to make the document more palatable and relevant. KHNS's Jillian Rogers reports.
The Code Commission idea was a byproduct of the controversial minor offenses ordinance. Most of the proposed changes to the long list of minor offenses were inconsequential because those rules are still listed in borough code. An ad hoc minor offenses committee softened some language and adjusted fines in the minor ordinance, but they couldn't add or remove offenses. The new commission will make recommendations to do away with or change sections of code that are no longer useful. So now, after public hearings and a nod from the assembly, the Code Review Commission awaits its new members. The notice announcing the group and calling for participants went up on July 18th. Mayor Jan Hill says it wasn't brought up at the last assembly meeting because it had already been announced at a previous meeting.
I have had several people chat with me a little bit about it and asking some questions. I've only received one official application.
The 7-member advisory board will be appointed by Hill. The assembly voted to launch the commission at its June 28th meeting after a lengthy discussion. The conversation focused on whether the assembly should strike the term local attorneys from the ordinance's wording and whether the new group should be called a commission or a committee. In the end, it's a commission, and the term local attorneys was axed in regards to who the group would consider suggestions from. The assembly also voted to remove the section of the ordinance that talks about the commission seeking funds to cover expenses. Assemblywoman Diana Lapham said at a recent meeting before the ordinance was approved that no matter what the group is called, there's a lot of work involved.
The perception idea of a commission over a committee, this is a standing committee of the assembly, and that's the idea I was coming from when I made this amendment. It gives anything that this committee does will be reviewed by our attorney, as well as our staff, our manager, and then come before the assembly. So they do not have the power to just arbitrarily change code and pass legislation in that regard.
Mayor Hill agreed that whoever is selected will have to devote a substantial amount of time and energy to the undertaking.
This will be probably one of the major winter projects. You know, some of us have a little more time in the winter to devote to this kind of a commitment, but I think that it is going to be a big job, and they will, once they get started, I believe they'll be meeting regularly. And I know that anybody that, you know, gets appointed to this committee will be ready to work.
Like the minor offenses ordinance, the Code Commission proposal drew a lot of interest from the public.
So many times we, you know, form committees, you know, ad hoc committees especially, and even our regular committees, and we don't have choices. You know, we've always got vacancies. So I think there's interest for this one, so I'm hopeful that we'll have some choices so that it can be a balanced committee.
Hill said they haven't decided yet if assembly members will be part of the new group. She says she's looking forward to a cleaner, more up-to-date code in the not-so-distant future.
It's going to be thorough, but my hope is when we get done, our code will have, you know, we'll get rid of those conflicts and we'll be able to clarify things that aren't clear. And possibly, you know, some of the code things are outdated and need to be removed.
Interested code champions can submit a letter of interest or pick up an application online or at the borough administration building. Resumes or a detailed description of qualifications are strongly encouraged. Applicants must be a Haynesboro resident, as it is defined in code.
It would really be nice to have choices so that it could be a balanced committee, because until we achieve that balance, the notice to apply to get on this committee will probably remain open.
Hill hopes to make the appointments by the August 23rd assembly meeting. In Haynes, I'm Jillian Rogers.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.